Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Morning geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, and that woman in San Francisco that has to leave messages on our answering machine. The self-employed insomniac feminist who is leaving these prolonged manifestos on our machine. Good morning to you. Very entertaining. Though you did miss a couple facts and you haven't been listening as closely as you think. Good morning to everybody else. I like to isolate one person out there in the world who's sitting alone, not sleeping, getting angry at me, getting angry at us because of the lack of gyna power in the room. Do you understand? We don't have enough gyna energy in here. You understand? I can find my inner girl. I know my inner girl. My inner girl is a bitch. She has an eating disorder, and her name's Jill. And she's hot. Thank you, Kayla. I have a hot inner girl. How'd you do this weekend, Mark Riley?
I enjoyed myself immensely. It was good. A very quiet weekend. I went to a chamber music concert to benefit the victims of the tsunami.
Wow. Yeah. Chamber music. You like classical music.
I like classical music. Yeah, it was a good cause. And I even bought a CD. Half the cost of which was going, or half the payment of which was going to the tsunami relief as well.
So good for you, man. Have you seen the ad on TV for that? Like, this is the best classical music CD ever in the world.
Ever made.
But doesn't it keep going? They're like, in the world, ever times 10, billion seven.
Well, because they're trying to sell classical music like they try to sell Nana Mouskouri what's the guy, Don Ho, or one of those people. He made more music than anyone who has ever breathed on the planet Earth.
It sounds so funny. That's like the best classical music CD made ever in the world. What is that? So, Chris, Kalo, the Costco Ho, how'd you do, man? How was the weekend? Did you do all right?
Yeah.
Everybody okay?
Kalo's always doing great.
I had a nice weekend. I saw The Aviator, which was mediocre.
What do you stop? Why?
No.
It was a great hour and a half movie, then like another 2 hours.
Did you go to Costco, though?
No, no Costco. Actually, the entire weekend was based around not cleaning my bathroom, so...
You and me both, dude. I didn't want to talk about that. I don't know how much...
Scary.
You know, folks, I know you're out there thinking, what are they talking about? There's news. There's elections in Iraq. Yes, we're going to get to that. We've got Mick Ware coming up, hopefully, in the second segment of this hour. We lost him last week because he had some stuff to cover. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's obviously a lot of stuff going on there now, but we will get him on the phone and get to the some hard facts from Baghdad, from Mick Ware. Kalo, yes, your bathroom problems, thank you for sharing those. I need to clean mine as well. I don't like to clean my bathroom. I got to do one room at a time. I did the cat room yesterday. I did the cat bathroom, which is my office. Now they're waking me up. Oh, my God. I don't know.
Do they jump on your bed or something?
I don't. I locked them. I'm not letting them in my bed. Not since that one peed on my comforter. You got to be kidding me.
Oh.
No, we've got boundaries in my house. But as soon as my alarm goes off in my bedroom to come to work, when they deep, 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 if I go back to sleep to wait for the second alarm, I'll hear the scratching at the door.
Let me in.
No, they just want to eat. They don't care about me, except for one of them. So what were you saying, Chris? You need glasses? Why do you think you need glasses?
Oh, no, that's, you really think that's interesting? I'd rather hear about your cats.
I need new glasses. I'm at that point where it's like, hey, I'm tired of looking at my face like this. That's the only reason I keep wearing them. I tried wearing contacts, I couldn't, but now I think I need new glasses.
No, contacts are disturbing. I know, Brendan uses those.
Some people can wear them, I can't wear them. Do you know what it felt like when I had contacts on? Felt like there was something in my eye!
Exactly.
And I could not get past it. So let me tell you about my weekend, then we'll get into Iraq. Sure. I did one of my secret covert clandestine gigs. I did an under-the-radar gig at the Richmond Jewish Community Center in JCC. Richmond, Virginia, the Weinstein JCC in Richmond, Virginia. I went in on Friday, holed up at the Sheraton in Richmond, got a little work done, did some reading, got up to speed with the world, and relaxed. Sometimes it's just nice to go to a hotel, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Especially
I have to deal with my cats. It was okay, though. It was not that it was too cold, but this is not important. So I go to Richmond JCC. All the people there are real nice. I did it last year. I was concerned that I wouldn't have enough new material. Woman opened for me, Betsy Salkind. She did a good job, and I did an hour and 15 minutes. But you know what's interesting about small cities? I got to be honest with you, Mark Riley. I went out to dinner in Richmond, Virginia on Friday night, had one of the best meals I ever had in my life.
Really?
Up there.
Where'd you go?
And I'm a condescending person, my friend. When I go to Richmond or I go to a small city and someone says, we're going to take you to this place and it's going to be good. You're from New York. You know good. This is going to be good. I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, I grew up. Yeah. Really going to be great. Richmond, Virginia is going to be cutting edge for Richmond,
but
Virginia.
But you know what? Everybody in the South knows that about people who live in New York. Right? Yeah. Anywhere south of Washington, D.C., if they're taking a New Yorker out to eat somewhere,
yeah,
they're scared to death. They are scared to death that you're going to come out and say, oh, yeah, that was really nice. Yeah.
Fine. Right, right.
Fine.
But you
really
look more so when you go to small cities and they're like, oh, you're from New York? I got to take you down to this neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
So then you go to the neighborhood. It's like one block. There's a bookstore, a coffee shop, and a gay guy.
It's just like New York,
it's
man.
It's like New York, right? You know? Yeah, exactly. This is exactly like New York. Thanks for bringing me here. No, but the food was awesome. It was this Italian place called Edo Squids. It was upstairs,
really?
And they did, garlic. You know me and food, but it was great.
What did you have?
Were you serious? I had some sort of fish. It wasn't rockfish. It was some other fish. I forgot. It was a Pacific Rim fish, and it was done with olive oil and garlic. Had some squid and beans. Had some, you know, broccoli rabe. You know, it was all very tasty.
Somehow I thought you were going to have, like, a huge veal chop or something.
Well, I thought about that. I thought about the veal chop, but then here's what happens. The next day, I go straight out. I go straight out Virginia, you know, townie.
Really?
I go to Denny's for breakfast. I slam down the biscuits, the Denny's biscuits.
Okay.
Yeah. And then that night, and I go to this place called, it wasn't Fridays, it was like a Fridays knockoff called Charlie's. Have the worst hamburger in my life. And one of those crappy Sundays that they have at those places.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I was so filled with food shame, I can't even begin to tell you. You know why? Because Jill couldn't handle it. My inner girl could not take what I did to myself. This is like, sometimes I get sick of hearing myself talk. So, you know, that was my trip. But the show itself, I did about an hour and a half. I really sort of laid into Republican Jews. I, you know, it's one thing, Southern Jews, that seems to cancel itself out in my head. But no, I'm open-minded, right? But Southern Republican Jews, I'm like, that's a weird triangular vortex. It makes me, it's just a vortex of like, what is that? Of self-hate, I don't know when it happened. When did it happen that, you know, that Southern Republican Jews were just Republican Jews in general? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I talked to some woman after the show.
Was she upset because you...
No, there's a lot of Republican Jews.
They're
Republicans for, you know, either fiscal reasons or another reason is it's like, you know, Israel. Whoever's good for Israel, if it's Republicans, you know, Israel, you know, will, you know, mm-hmm. overshadow anything that goes on in this country for some Jewish people. And then there's the other thing is that, you know, Jewish people just are not involved with social causes as much as they used to, primarily because a woman pointed this out to me, is that we're two generations removed from the immigrant experience. I think in the 60s and when, you know, Jews championed civil rights and mm-hmm. social causes, that they could empathize with the situation because they were only a generation removed from it.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's all gone. You know, and they're different. They've integrated. There are class issues, but it's not on the table anymore to be a Jewish liberal, a Jewish Democrat in the way that it once was.
Well, you know, later on this morning we can talk about how that same dynamic has hit the black community, because it has. Most people don't think it has because Bush is only getting 11% of the black vote. But
okay.
The fact is that there are numbers of black people now who are moving away from what was for about 60 years the Democratic paradigm. You know,
right.
Since blacks voted Republican from the end of the Civil War through the New Deal,
right,
through the 1930s. Once Roosevelt came in, and this is kind of almost inexplicable given the fact that he did not really enact a great deal of civil rights legislation, but Franklin Roosevelt caused, and the New Deal caused blacks to vote Democratic in humongous numbers, which, of course, brought on the paradox of making common cause with the Strom Thurmonds of the world,
right,
who were also Democrats at the time.
Yeah, and now the FDR is sort of like the Antichrist to the neocon death cult.
And
obviously what was Republican during that time and what Republicans represented during those years is certainly different than what's going on now.
Oh, no, there's no doubt.
And Karl Rove is dead set on bringing in, you know, a larger black voting bloc, you know, to sort of, once again, to, you know, this is part of their big plan to completely bury the legacy of Democrats.
Oh,
Of FDR, of all the civil rights legislation. They're trying to, and you've been fleshing this out. We're going to talk about it in a little while.
Yeah, because it's insidious. It's ongoing, and in spite of the fact that, you know, well, there have been everybody from the Congressional Black Caucus to an unlikely coalition of black Baptists who have stood up and said, look, you got to do better than just talk on this stuff. So you're speaking to the president now.
Yeah.
Rove is working his Spinmeister magic. And you'd be surprised what's going to turn out here.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a little while. There's also, they're doing it with Social Security, too, trying to push that thing, which turned out to be a lie in terms of how it affects the black community. So, 16 past the hour, we're going to cover Iraq when we come back. We're going to talk about this stuff a little later in the show. We got Mick Ware coming up. We got a good show. Happy Monday, as happy as possible to you. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Dude, can you read that play in for a minute? That sounds great. Good morning, Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to our 46th affiliate, WWTQ 680 AM in Memphis. We are piping in to the homeland of Elvis Presley.
Yes.
We are piping into the homeland of Beale Street. I had some experiences in Memphis, Tennessee. Say hello to the Peabody Ducks.
Uh-oh.
Good morning to the Peabody Ducks. That's all I got to say.
You know who's a DJ in Memphis?
Who?
B.B. King.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Wow, I love this song. This is one of those songs that my dad used to play in the car when I was growing up.
I always want to know who did the saxophone solo. The kit,
right? Don't you feel like you're on like 1960s radio right now? We're just sort of talking. This is Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs coming to you live on LIV. This is Wolfman Jack. All right. Hey, yeah, a little different voice. Wolfman Jack. Wasn't that great?
That was the first public use of the term L7.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Square!
All right. That makes
that's
sense.
When you say busting out, I think Rick James did a thing called busting out
L7.
Of L7.
That's what Wolfgang Jack told L7. Yeah. Hey, let's talk about Iraq.
Let's talk about it. Ooh, Iraq.
Okay. I guess we can let Pam the Sham fade out and do one of those famous Morning Sedition transitions from fun to...
serious.
It's not serious, though. A lot of people are fairly excited, and I got to be honest with you, Riley, coming into this, because this will be the day of news, it's hard for me to accept that things went relatively well, considering that this is the wrong war, considering that we're there for the wrong reasons, and considering that I have such deep contempt for the neocon death cult and everything they stand for, and I want to see nothing be attributed to George W. Bush as being a success, but it seems that some people are kind of happy over there.
You know what? I don't think
I'm happy about that.
I don't think you have to attribute this to George W. Bush. What I think you can attribute it to is some very smart thinking on the part of the multinational military people over there to take precautions, even though anywhere from 28 to 44 people, depending on which report you read, died yesterday.
Some real nasty stuff.
Some really nasty stuff.
Some people offering people rides and
blowing
car
it up. Yep.
That is heavy.
But despite all of that.
Yeah.
It looks as though certainly some Iraqi officials are saying that the turnout could exceed 60%.
Mm.
That is extraordinary.
Better than
given
here.
given these circumstances.
Yeah.
And in Sunni-dominated areas, which people thought no one would vote in, the turnout, at least, again, election officials are saying, could reach as high as 40%.
Really? I mean, because I was seeing footage on CNN, I'm reading these pieces today, it looks like in some areas, like in Tikrit, like basically nobody showed up. In Outsider City, a lot of people didn't show up. In Ramallah, some people, it was pretty low there.
It was low in some of those places, but in other places, it was as high as 80%.
Right. Do you guys remember? Like 8 million people or so?
I'm not sure exactly what the total number of people who turned out, and I'm not sure we'll know that before the total,
vote.
Yeah, and that could come at the end of this week. But it appears at least in the early, because they didn't do exit polling, but early estimates would seem to indicate that the slate that was backed by the Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani will come out of this the big winner, which I'm sure he knew going into this. He was the person, by the way, that pushed the United States to hold the elections now and was one of the earliest candidates other than Alawi, one of the earliest interest groups, I should say, other than Alawi, to put up a slate to contest this election.
Right.
So his people look like they're going to be the very, very big winners here. But the other big winners were the people who coordinated a strategy once they began hearing intelligence about how the insurgents would strike. They literally stopped all vehicular traffic in Iraq.
I know
no
some
less.
Cats were saying that, you know, this is like, why didn't they do this from the beginning? They locked down that city like they had never seen it locked down before.
Yeah, Baghdad
and
was...
They secured it.
Yeah,
they were tight on
it. And, you know, with a couple of exceptions.
Yeah.
And again, very tragic exceptions.
Ugh.
The fact of the matter is that there was a lot less insurgent violence than either the insurgents had promised or than the American military thought was going to take place. Now, we're going to get fleshed out on this a lot better when we talk to Mick Ware on the other side of the,
well, this is weird,
the other side of the half hour.
Yeah, because I was talking about how secure it was, but it looks like, you know, most of the attacks that happened, that, you know, all of them but one of the day's nine attacks, the suicide attacks, came in Baghdad. So as much as they were touting the fact that, you know, that it was locked down and it was as secure as it's ever been there, it was, they still got through,
yeah,
the insurgents.
Yeah, they still got through in some cases. Now, when you start talking about, for example, in, you know, areas of the Sunni Triangle, in Ramadi,
yeah,
apparently only 300 ballots were cast, and most of those were cast by cops and soldiers.
Ramadi, that's what I meant to say when I said Ramallah.
Yeah. You know, but the fact is that, and by the way, you know, this is in stark contrast, apparently, to just last November, when you had large numbers of Iraqi security people and police literally deserting their posts. Apparently, they stood fast during most of the election.
Right.
Yesterday. Now, what was interesting to me, Mark, was that by about 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon, George W. Bush was on television declaring the Iraqi elections a resounding success, which, of course, really is saying, I am a resounding success, because this really is all about him.
But he was careful to say that we're still at war, you know, this is a great first step.
That, I mean,
he was hedging it a little bit.
Well, that was a flank, that was, you know, girding his flank against someone saying we need a timetable to get out because the elections were a success.
Right.
That's why he said that. You know, we're not going to be able to, you know, quit this right away, because he doesn't want Ted Kennedy or anybody like Ted Kennedy jumping up and saying, well, given this success, let's get those 150,000 troops the heck out.
I want to talk to Mick Ware about some of the response from the other Arab countries, because it's interesting. A lot of them don't want this to work out.
Well, no, because they've got dictatorships, and they're afraid George W. Bush may be casting his eye at them next.
Exactly.
Stay with us. Mick Ware is coming up. We've also got some information from...
Ramon, he's
coming.
Yeah,
he's coming up as well. This is Air America Radio. Good morning.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Got a headache.
Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Yes.
Air America Radio. Good morning, Memphis. Welcome to our 46 affiliate, WWTQ 680 AM, Memphis, Tennessee. Ramon just came in with, he dragged a parachute in here. All right, anyways, here's George Bush's Palm Pilot for today, January 31st, 7 AM. Wake up. Note, what time is it in Iraq? It's freedom time. 8 a.m. Call Armstrong Williams. Cancel today's puff piece. Don't need to pay for good publicity today. 9 a.m. Call Mayor of Baghdad. Note, if they want to put up a statue of me, make sure they give me a nice-sized presidential bulge. That joke goes out to our self-employed insomniac friend in Oakland. 11 a.m., revised State of the Union address. Add this. To everyone who ever doubted Iraq would have elections, bite me. 1 p.m., call producers of Super Bowl halftime show. Bump Paul McCartney for 10-minute Iraqi voting tribute. Note, do I parachute in or jetpack? Hey. 3 p.m., call Mattel. Have them start work on the George Bush Liberator of Iraq action figure. Note, make sure they give me a nice-sized presidential bowl. That's some of that adolescent humor we do here on the show occasionally. And here's the one that's more witty. 8 p.m. Plan Legacy. These elections should bring me one step closer to my dream, Mount Bushmore. Bushmore. I'm making note of adolescent stuff because I got another email. I got email on the brain, of course. I got an email from some guys like, why do you guys do adolescent humor? Oh, because we're trying to alienate people like you?
Yeah.
What about that?
Let's talk to Mick Ware, man. We got important stuff going on.
That's
Mick
right.
Mick Ware, the Time Magazine, Baghdad's bureau chief for Time Magazine. He's in Bakuba. He's gonna lay it out for us right now. Good morning, Mick. Is it as good as they're saying it is?
Hey, Mick.
Hi, guys. How are you? Look, I don't know. I've been wondering all morning whether it's just me, because I'm watching the satellite televisions, I'm listening to the U.S. military officers and the press officers here in the U.S. base at Bakuba, and quite frankly, it just doesn't gel for me, not with what I saw. And I'm wondering, you know, maybe I'm a bit jaded, but I saw a microcosm. I was with one unit, a reconnaissance unit from the U.S. military 1st Infantry Division in Bakuba. And what I saw doesn't quite match the hype. I mean, look, there was an election yesterday, and that is fantastic. People willing to stand up and have a go and do that. But in terms of the sense of independence, in terms of any real mandate, in terms of the process, and in terms of what this means for the war here, the insurgency, it just doesn't add up, quite frankly.
So what are you seeing?
Some of the stuff that I saw yesterday. Well, for example, I mean, any sense of this being an independent election is simply not the case. Given all the security circumstances and the logistics nightmare of putting this show on, the election, you know, it just couldn't be done without the U.S. military. I mean, the recon boys I was with, at 2 a.m. we left this base to deliver the ballot boxes and the ballot papers to election polling booths. Now, when we got there, here's the Iraqi security forces protecting these places. Two places were attacked with rocket-propelled grenades and mortars while we were there. And these Iraqi security guys were terrified. They had nothing to back themselves up. So if it was not for the U.S. presence, they couldn't possibly have hoped to have done it. And then the process itself, I mean, there was a lot of confusion. Ballot boxes that were supposed to be collected were brought in, stamps to show that it's a legitimate ballot, went missing. A lot of them weren't returned at the end of the day. Here in Bakuba, a third of electoral staff didn't show up. So a third of the booths couldn't open. We had some fighting here. I mean, it's a really mixed bag, but it's interesting. This is part of the Sunni heartland. This used to be an insurgent stronghold, but it's also got a lot of Shia here, a chunky Shia community. So it's a bridge between two worlds. So maybe this is just a taste of what the mix is like between the Shia who voted in droves and the Kurds who voted in droves, and the Sunni, who by and large, it appears, didn't come out to vote.
So, Del, where does that leave the Sunnis now? I mean, how does that leave them in terms of what's supposed to happen next?
Well, according to the Sunni sheikhs, the Sunni politicians, and basically the Sunni fighters that I spoke to in the 2 weeks leading up to this election, the answer to that is armed resistance. We're now talking about a political wing with an armed wing, thereby trying to legitimize the insurgents.
So you're talking about a Sunni army within the new Iraqi political landscape.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be formal in that sense, but what a lot of them have said to me, certainly the more educated ones, clearly former top-ranking military officers in the Iraqi army, say to me, think in terms of Sinn Féin and the IRA. That's the kind of movement that we're now putting together. So we're now going to see that start coming into play, perhaps. I mean, these guys, because of their own belligerence or because they didn't see that the process was what they were after, did not participate, so they got nothing out of it. This is a recipe for future unrest. I mean, in terms of the war here, essentially...
Uh-oh. Oh, Mick, we're losing you.
We're losing you, Mick.
We'll try and get you back in a second. We got Mick Ware on the phone. Hopefully he'll stay on the phone. Pretty contradictory stuff he's given us to what we're seeing from some of the mainstream media outlets. Hopefully we can get him back. It's Air America Radio at 40 past the hour.
You're listening to Morning Sedition, the highest rated, most respected news show in America. On Air America Radio.
Have 6:44 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
On Morning Sedition, we've got Mick Ware, Time Magazine's Baghdad bureau chief, back on the phone. He's in Bakuba. We're discussing the elections that took place yesterday.
Mick, I'm curious to find out. We're being told here in the States that the relatively small loss of life that took place yesterday means, A, that either the insurgents are weaker than most people thought, or B, the coalition military came up with a brilliant strategy for keeping them at bay. Who's right?
Well, look, first of all, let me say this. The election itself was a great thing, okay? I mean, not because this is a furtherance of Bush administration policy or because it validates in any way what's going on here, but because a lot of people simply got a chance to find their voice. I mean, just the sheer expression of it alone makes it in some way worthwhile. But in military terms, it shows us a lot of things about the nature of the war here. Now, look, the insurgents in no way ever stood a chance of bringing the election down. And they made that clear. They've been quite open about that. It's simply beyond their capabilities, they were saying. It's also within the US military's capabilities to lock these cities down, certainly for short periods. And the imposition of martial law, like curfews and restrictions, aids that. Okay? This is why I think the insurgents were saying to me before the election, part of it is self-serving, but part of it is realistic. They're going, look, the election itself means nothing to us. The transition in, on June 30 last year of sovereignty meant nothing to us. The governing council meant nothing to us. We just continue business as usual. Now, don't forget, too, we're talking about, as you rightly said, relative terms. I mean, at least 44 people died just to cast a vote yesterday. And think of it like this. While it was fantastic that the elections were not, you know, set alight, that they were able to proceed, and while it was fantastic in terms of security that not one of the suicide bombers was able to physically get inside a polling booth, they actually exploded in the queues or while they were being patted down, so they never got inside the secure areas. Think about it this way. 9 men strapped munitions to their chests and blew themselves up at polling booths. 9. Now, if that happened in Jerusalem on election day, or if that happened in Moscow with Chechens on election day, it'd be hailed as a crisis.
Right.
But I mean, in relative terms of the scale of the horror here, that's a good day.
Hey, Mick, now, in terms of this being carried out, the election actually being carried out and pulled off, in terms of other Arab countries seeing it as somewhat of a success, what are the chances of them resenting that and funneling more money into the insurgency?
Look, that's a very real prospect. We saw that previously in Afghanistan. Iran felt very threatened by an emerging democracy in Kabul. So it went to great lengths, directly, indirectly, and through its proxy warlords to make things as difficult as possible. They're doing the same thing here, but the irony, the absolute irony of it, is that my view is, by and large, the neocons brought this war about for broad geopolitical strategic purposes, having a presence in the region and really going head-to-head with some of these problem areas. Foremost among that, amidst that group, is Iran. They want to be here in Iran's face, I firmly believe. The irony is that this election has great potential to actually embolden Iran and to strengthen it. Why? Okay, they don't like the idea of democracy next door, but they love the idea of extending Shia influence. And while many of the political players here do not answer directly to Tehran, do not want an Iranian-type theocratic state here, Iran has thousands and thousands of agents and parties and people that they're backing by proxy in this election. So if there is a real dominance by the Shia majority here of this government, in some way, that may actually aid Tehran rather than detract from what it wants to do.
Mick Ware, we are seeing here in the States the Bush administration continuing to say that if this newly elected Iraqi government wants U.S. troops to leave that America will, in fact, withdraw those troops. Iraq's interior minister says that it could be 18 months before the Iraqi security forces are ready to do this without American help. Do you think that Iraqis do you think this new Iraqi government will in any way, shape, or form tell the Americans it's time to leave anytime soon?
There will certainly be pressure from the Iraqi straight for that to happen, or at least demonstrations of that kind of expression. I mean, it would be very popular for any political figure, particularly someone who may not only be on the fringes of power, yet may, for example, be in the parliament, to really push that agenda. But interestingly, just in the last days before the election, there was a statement from Washington where the generals said their plans included maintaining a U.S. troop level of at least 120,000 forces here in Iraq for the next 2 years. I believe it was Prime Minister Iyad Alawi who came out and said he will not be seeking a timetable for U.S. withdrawal if he wins the election. Ahmed Chalabi, the former darling of the Pentagon, now the darling of Tehran, said the same thing. So they know the reality. The American trainers here, the special forces who work with the Iraqi security forces, and the Iraqis themselves say that they are years away from having a military security and police apparatus that can protect itself. This is going to be a very thorny issue.
Mick, Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani must be coming out of this election as the big winner. He's the one that pushed for it to take place now. He's the one that had a slate of candidates contesting the election. Is he the big winner that he's being portrayed here?
Well, we don't have enough of the results flowing in just yet to know the full extent of the Shia gains in this election, but we all expect them to be substantial. And given the way that a lot of the big Shia political players handled this election, uniting on a particular ticket, presumably with some prior arrangement as to how they'd carve up power if they were managed to secure it, then, yeah, in that event, Sistani will be coming into his own in many ways. But he is the dominant force within the Shia house, but he's not the only force, and it's not a unified house. So there's going to be a lot of room for movement in all of this, even in terms of Sistani's true grip on whatever power emerges. And whatever government gets in is going to have to play this really carefully. And even though the Sunnis boycotted the election, they all know and acknowledge that in some way they're going to have to include them anyway, tokenistically or in any real sense.
So now, with all that movement within the Shia contingent itself, is that going to sort of help buffer the possibility of it becoming overly theocratic? Are they going to have to be diplomatic? Because I know that Sistani has been, you know, paying a lot of lip service to being open-minded about things that that these kind of clerics aren't usually open-minded to. Do you think he'll renege on some of that, or how do you think that's going to unfold with the government?
Well, I've always believed there's been the possibility of this place sliding back into or sliding towards some kind of Islamic theocracy. And in none of the scenarios do I think it would be a caste model of Tehran. Yet it may have a flavour of that. But don't forget too, even Sistani and the clerics who lead the Shia community in Iraq know that by and large their constituency, whilst it heeds their call and adheres to the position of the Ayatollah almost blindly at times, at heart, you know, they're not secularists, but they're not the hardline religionists that we've seen elsewhere. I mean, bear in mind, a lot of these guys, a lot of these Shia, would have fought in the Iran-Iraq war. Now, that was about Iraq, defending Iraq, to their minds. I mean, hundreds of thousands were conscripted and had no choice. But anything that kept them going was this kind of sense. So it's not going to be a lay-down mazair that on marches Islamic government or on marches, you know, dominance of Shia brand of Islam. But again, this is all going to be part of the mix. Sistani is going to have to answer to that part of the constituency that is seeking a much purer, in their terms, government, style of government.
Mick, to what extent will the Sunnis be involved, not just in terms of government or cabinet posts, but also in the writing and drafting of the new Iraqi constitution? There was some word at the end of last week that the Sunnis, regardless of turnout in the election, were looking to have some input in the writing of the constitution.
Well, that's true, and I would assume, quite frankly, as a matter of real politics, that they're going to get that say, or at least to have their two cents heard during the constitutional drafting process. Like I was saying earlier, no matter who's in government, they have to address the Sunni minority in terms of some position within the government. So too with the constitution. You can't make a constitution in this country without the Sunni. And in many ways, the same applies to the Kurds and certainly to the Shia. But regardless of the ethnic balance and the fairness of it all, if the Sunnis are formally excluded, because now they're excluded by effect, then there is nothing to hold back whatever rage they may have, or we have no way of knowing what that may do to what is principally a Sunni insurgency here.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mick. It's great talking to you. Be careful, okay? We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mick.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That was Mick Ware, the Time Magazine's Baghdad Bureau Chief, reporting from Bakuba. Very interesting. We're going to talk to Noah Feldman later on in the show about that constitution they're going to be drafting up and how that's going to work and some of the intricacies of that.
A little different view than we're getting here in the States.
I'll leave it
about
to Mick, you know.
Yeah, right.
Mick's guy.
Doesn't mince words.
I love that guy. Here we go. That's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are marching orders for today. Write these down. One, tell people the new movies Alone in the Dark and Hide and Seek are about Bush's Iraq policy. Two, for the sake of your nerve, stop referring to the race for DNC chairman as the second most important election of our lifetime. Three, drop tie-dye mixture into Dick Cheney's laundry so that he wears bright, cheery rainbow colors to his next Holocaust memorial appearance. Oh, yeah, that's okay. Four, lodge FCC complaint against new Wayne Newton reality show on the E! Network. The First Amendment has its limits, people. Really. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Oh, sure, I watched the Iraqi elections. I really liked the part where the people lined up to vote, thinking their lives might get better. That was hilarious. Wake up, sheeple. The BS is up around your chin, folks. Come on. What do we got?
Whoa!
Little Elvis.
Jailhouse Rock. All right, Memphis. Next hour, we're going to find out what's happening on Capitol Hill from our friend Bob Kuzak.
Okay.
We've also, of course, got your dreams. What's going on inside your head when we continue here on Air America Radio. Everybody,
that's it. It's 6 past the hour, Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Monday morning. We've, we just had a great conversation with Mick Ware later in the show. We're going to be talking to Noah Feldman about, about the Iraqi Constitution.
Which is a work in progress, to say the least.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, it's very hard for me to wrap my brain around just how it's going to work out, how, the parliamentary system is going to work out there. But Mick gave us a very different portrait or picture or illustration or fleshing out of what's going on there than we've been seeing a lot on CNN. I mean, CNN is utilizing the two examples, the two pieces of footage of dancing Iraqis at the polling places as repetitiously as they use the rejoicing, after 9/11 videos of the Iraqis, the Muslims saying, yeah, you remember those?
Yeah, like those weren't even Iraqis, I don't think.
No,
I
they
think
weren't. They were Palestinians, maybe.
Yeah, I think they were Palestinians.
But it's just interesting how much, that there is an angle, there is a spin that goes on, certainly on of whatever's coming out of on the mainstream media outlets, because the picture that Mick Ware presented us with, which we'll hit later in the hour again, in 30 past, was not that he was not taking anything away from the process. He was saying that the process was very encouraging, it was good, but what's going to happen in the future in relation to the insurgency, in relation to the Sunnis, in relation to the conflicts that are going to happen, in relation to how much of this was guided and forced upon the people by the U.S. is all up in the air still.
It's all up in the air, and of course, when you lock down a country, even for 24 hours, like the military did, to conduct these elections, you also ruffle a few feathers. because people really were not able to travel. There was no vehicular traffic in Baghdad allowed anywhere.
Except for suicide bombers.
Except for suicide bombers, yeah, who were not able to actually, as you heard Mick say, get into the voting booths. They blew themselves up out in front of a couple of places.
So they got in somehow. And you know what? You know what's really sad and devious and demonic and horrifying is that some of them posed as people taking voters to the polls.
To the polls, yeah. And, you know, the other thing that we're getting a lot of here, Mark, is the idea that the turnout in Iraq is indicative of dissatisfaction and anger at the insurgents, which may well be true on the part of a lot of Iraqis. That does not, however, negate their anger at the coalition forces that are still occupying the country, because both sides here are preventing them from rebuilding their own infrastructure, to getting electricity to people, getting water to people, opening up schools, creating jobs for people, all those things, which, by the way, will be the responsibility of this new government, whoever they are. These things have not been done.
They'd be the responsibility of this new government at the behest of American corporate interest to, you know, make sure that all these systems are privatized to American companies. I bet you that's going to happen. I saw a report over the weekend that I can't validate, so I didn't bring it in here, about, you know, these Monsanto seeds, these seeds that cannot be replanted. They have to be bought year in and year out from Monsanto's. They're genetically altered, you know, seeds for crops that some, you know, Iraqi farmers that had already been, you know, bought out by these Monsanto seeds that they put sort of a licensing in place that would only enable them to have these seeds. That are they can't be stored, they can't be replanted, they don't yield any seeds, so you have to buy year in and year out the same crop style, the
is,
same
is seed. Are these seeds legal in the state?
Yes.
They
genetically patent seeds. It's the bane of some farmers' existence because, you know, they cannot get a seed stock going and they cannot repeat growth. It sort of guarantees it's planned obsolescence of seeds now.
Well, I'm surprised they haven't used that to cut down on the marijuana crops across the country.
Well, oh yeah. Well, no, then that would mean that Monsanto would have a patent on marijuana, and that would take away the creativity of some what did he call them?
The entrepreneurial spirit of some of our growing population.
Biologists, botanists, the genetic botanists who are up in Humboldt, doing the big work on
the hydro kids.
Yes, this seed is going to blow your mind, my friend.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So. Also, speaking about elections, George Soros came out. George Soros is thought to, you know, sort of be the puppet master in charge of all of the Democratic movement in the world. They thought that for the year that we've been on the air, I can't tell you how many idiots, you know, conservative idiots, like, you know, what happened? George Soros pulled the money out on Air America, blah-de-blah. Yeah. But you know what? He never gave us a dime.
No.
That was a hilarious thing. It's like, we were walking around here saying, is Soros the guy giving us the money? And they're like, no. No, it's not the guy giving us the money.
Media mythology, folks.
So now the billionaire George Soros said that, Kerry was at fault. Kerry screwed it up. That's what he said. He said, quote, Kerry did not actually offer a credible and coherent alternative to George Bush.
Yep.
Quote, that had a lot to do with Bush being reelected. Well, that was pretty clear. But he said that Kerry campaign, quote, tried to emphasize his role as a Vietnam War hero and downplay his role as an anti-Vietnam War hero, which he was. Soros then went on to say, had he admitted, owned up to, I think actually the outcome could have been different. That's
well, you were saying that in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, see, what's interesting about this, too, A, Soros comes out with it at the same time John Kerry goes, you know, makes his first public chat show appearance on Meet the Press yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it from the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. And what's significant about that? America's not there.
They
America
there.
Pulled out.
Yeah. But why is that? This administration doesn't believe in taking, because a lot of this had to do with environmental responsibility.
Yeah. Something the Bush administration has no interest in promoting on a worldwide level.
Yeah. So what do you make of this, that, you know, that Soros actually, you know, said this? Is this like is it him reaching out to find a new candidate? You know, what is this, what does it imply about him? Is he taking a shot at Kerry?
Oh, he's taking a shot at Kerry. There's no doubt about that. But he is going to continue to remain involved in politics. He put up $26 million.
Over the last year, primarily for advertising. Through,
yeah.
I guess those, what are they called? The 527s, 427s, 427s, what are they called?
527.
What am I, stupid? Come on, man.
The 527s, yeah. But he says Democrats need to counter a very effective conservative message machine. There really needs to be an alternative.
Well, that's it. That's it. What about spending some money on that? You know, I'm reading this article about this, you know, secret, you know, sort of corporate retreat all these Republicans went on over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
To sort of lay out their plans for Social Security. You know what I mean? That what is it going to take to get Democrats to build a significant message infrastructure that, you know, actually lays down the law as to, you know, how we are supposed to discuss issues? I mean, when are they going to do that?
The Democrats will likely never even agree to build on their strengths. Let me give you a small idea of some strength that the Democrats
can we hold it?
Okay,
can we hold
yeah,
it?
We'll hold it.
Because I want to talk about the way that the Bush administration is trying to reframe Social Security, the meetings that they're having. They have, you know, PowerPoint, you know, sort of presentations. I mean, look, they met in this clandestine, weird old bunker where they, you know, they all sort of, you know, sat there and, you know, did the rituals, you know, cut the chicken's head off, made the sacrifice, and then decided how they were going to sell Social Security. We'll talk about that when we come back. 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Sound Mortgage Group does business in Florida.
Past the hour. Good morning. Good morning, Mark Riley.
I'm the only one old enough to know this song by just hearing the first couple of notes of it. K-Lo, admit it. Admit it. Come clean.
I know it.
Come clean.
I don't know it.
But K-Lo, how much did I hear of it?
You heard about two notes of it.
Two notes of it.
My friend, I had the best of Wilson Pickett when I was 14. Granted, I wasn't alive when this came out.
I was.
But
Plus, he lived in Englewood, New Jersey for a long time.
Didn't he go crazy there one night?
Well, he drove his car on the mayor's lawn and threatened to kill him. Yeah allegedly.
So we're coming into Memphis. It's our 46th affiliate. It's 6:80 a.m. Down there in Tennessee. Good morning to you. Welcome aboard to the welcome onto the Morning Sedition boat. Welcome. And just to introduce you to who I am, here's a little something about me. This is my dream from last night. My therapist told me to write these down. I do these every day. It's cold and gray and windy. I must be in Ireland or England because my dollars aren't worth squat. I'm climbing up a steep cobblestone street. When I get to the top of the street, I look down. Wow, spreading below me is a vast field of emerald green divided into a grid of perfectly groomed squares with the ocean glittering silver on the horizon. Standing on the squares are stiff, life-size game pieces wearing ornate old Crimean war uniforms, big handlebar mustaches, and tall, fuzzy hats. An old man in a tweed cap puts his hand on my shoulders and says, "They're waiting for you, son. It's your turn to play." I look closer and see that it's Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Iyada Lowy and Iraqi insurgents and American soldiers and terrorists and Fox News and Osama and Tony Blair and hundreds of others. The old man says, "It's called Global Empire, but watch out. Easy to get into, tricky to get out of." I say, "Hey, stay, please help me, will you?" He shakes his head and says, "I'll be in the pub, lad." I look down at the board. What do I do first? So I take the neocon death cult off the board. Bush and Cheney just wrap themselves in a flag and stay right on their square. I say, "Take the terrorists off the board." The terrorists take out shovels and dig in deeper. I say, "Take the American troops off the board." They try to leave, but their feet are stuck to the game board. I say, "Take the media off the board." The media just fixes its hair and keeps babbling to each other. I say, "How about the insurgents? Get them off the board." But every time one leaves, two take its place. I say, "All right, take the American people off the board." Then I realize they are off the board. The Super Bowl is this week. The old man comes back and I say, "Why won't anything move?" He shrugs, "Don't know, son, but you're going to have to leave. You're out of money." As I said, easy to get into, tricky to get out of. I'm doing sort of a hybrid of Scottish and Irish and English. I woke up and my bed was filled with Stratego. Stratego!
Stratego.
Stratego, the game,
Stratego.
Man.
Stratego.
All right, so, dude, Sorry, I tried to throw that in the garbage. Hey, Riley, I'm sorry. I'm getting past. I'm getting beyond the dude thing. I'm losing the dude. So we're talking about George Soros, basically criticizing Kerry, blaming Kerry, in public for losing the election because of his inability to commit to who he was, which was certainly a criticism that we had, and so did the right, so did the left, so did everybody. Okay, fine. So he is saying that he's going to stay in the game. This is a guy with, never-ending money.
Yeah.
And basically, it seems to me that he's reaching out to Democrats saying, all right, who's next? Who's got the goods? Who's got the guts to be a real Democrat in this new age? Who's got the goods?
And you know what's happening?
What?
They're all standing there looking at each other like, am I the one?
They're all standing there going, well, Boxer's getting some good press.
Yeah.
Let's run her. Do we have guts? I mean, we don't want to alienate the moderates. You know what? There's no... Screw the moderates. All right, let's get back to the principles.
Let me tell you something. This is going to continue to be a problem. And, Mark, they can't even take advantage when they have made some inroads. Let me give you a small example of what I'm talking about.
All right.
The Republicans, if you'll notice, and the media has been totally complicit in this, the Republicans have shifted the Social Security debate from talking about privatization to talking about personal accounts. You know why?
Personal accounts, ownership, because privatization is a scary
issue. Because the Democrats made privatization a scary issue for the Republicans.
How about this one? They're using the word choice.
I know.
They're using the word, they're trying to co-opt the word choice into their Social Security pitch.
Okay, but now the Democrats have got to do them one better. They were successful in demonizing the word privatization so the Republicans can no longer use it. So now what's next?
Mm.
You've got to go to the next level. You've got to do that with every attempted framing that the Republicans try to use. This whole thing that Bush did out in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia.
Yeah,
past weekend.
What's it called? The Greenbrier Hotel.
Yeah. And, he's getting ready to, sit up and talk with the members of Congress and their spouses. And they got all kinds of PowerPoint demonstrations. They got all kinds of high-tech marketing stuff about how to frame the Social Security debate.
And you know what? These guys listen to them. That's the thing. They sit down these congressmen. They sit down these Republican spokespeople, and they present it. This is like a quarter of $1 billion goes into to think tanks to create these ideas, these framing. They put all this research into restructuring the language. And when they sit down, this isn't a debate. These congresspeople aren't there to sit there and go, well, let's talk about this. No, they're there to be taught. They lay it down. They're like, you guys are going to say this. And there's no, but, because if there was, see, that's the one thing that the Democrats can't seem to learn, is that when these guys say something, a lot of times, that's it. There's no but. That's why, that's why so many people voted for them, knowing that they were liars, knowing that they were exploiting their fears, because they would come out and they'd say, this is the way it's going to be. And when people said, but, they'd be like, no, this is the way it's going to be. And for some people, that's like, oh, okay, no buts. Yay, no thinking for me.
Every congressperson that was at the Greenbrier Hotel got a 100-page resource guide on Social Security, and according to one White House official, this is one aide to a Republican leader, actually, quote, if we're going to take on an adult issue, we need to employ an adult marketing plan.
But the thing is, but a lot of them still, apparently, Riley, am I right and wrong in saying this, that a lot of these guys, a lot of the Republicans, thank God, are skeptical because they don't want to alienate their constituents, and it's really the wrong thing to do. They're also taking the word crisis out of the old frame.
Yes, they're taking crisis out because they're just calling it a problem. Because they know that, and they've probably done research that tells them that the word crisis leads people to believe that they're overblowing the dimensions of the problem. They're also moving away from talking to young people about this privatization scheme. They are now talking to people that are approaching retirement age and saying, essentially, you don't have to worry about your benefits being cut. That's a very smart strategy. I don't agree with the Republicans about what time of day it is, but it's a smart strategy. Now, they still, I think, do have to, if they're going to win at this, have to reach out to young people. But now they're saying to older people, because the AARP and all these other folks are so lined up against this Social Security plan, that, hey, you know what? It's not going to hurt you. You won't see your benefits cut.
Right. And since you're young, you like to have fun, don't you? So we're going to take that money that's supposed to be guaranteed by the government for your retirement, no matter what, and we're going to... Yay! Oh, I'm sorry. It's not going to be worth as much as it would have been had it just been protected and guaranteed.
But, you know, so much of what Bush is doing is based on a political agenda and a political strategy that he hopes will succeed his presidency so that this will go on for generations to come. Remember something, Mark, and this is something that struck me like a ton of bricks when I read it. More Americans now have 401k plans than belong to unions. That would have been unthinkable just a decade ago.
Well, this is part of the grand Republican strategy to, you know, assuming that, that poor people don't die because of their policy before they hit retirement age, they at least want them to die broke.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. They don't care if they die broke, that's for sure.
You know, get the money where you can. That's how they're going to fuel this economy, is by killing the poor through negligence.
Yeah.
That's the Republican way. We'll be back.
I'm just listening to this music, man. This is Sam and Dave.
Let's let everyone listen to it. Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Good morning, Memphis, Tennessee, our 46th affiliate, WWTQ 680 AM. This song is for you. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, and good morning to Booker T. Jones, wherever you may be.
And Steve Cropper and Duck Dunn.
Yeah.
I don't know who the drummer was.
Willie somebody. I forgot his last name.
I saw Booker T. and the MGs with Neil Young. It's kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of interesting. Good morning to me, Mark Maron. You're listening to Morning Sedition at Air America Radio. And every week on Morning Sedition, we like to pay tribute to those recently departed individuals who have changed our world forever, but for the most part remain unrecognized. It is to these unknown heroes that we dedicate this, our morning remembrance, with Morning Sedition grief correspondent Mort Mortensen. Oh, already?
Thelma White, actress. Thelma White, whose portrayal of a hard-boiled marijuana addict in the 1936 movie Reefer Madness inspired a whole generation of potheads to laugh at getting far out, got further out than she ever could have imagined this month, and she died at the age of 94. Born in 1910, White was the daughter of carnival performers who traveled throughout the Midwest, entertaining children with low-budget exploitation skits about addiction to spirits of Ipecac.
You all right, man?
I got something in my eyes. Somebody chopping onions?
No, no. Maybe.
All right.
Yeah.
During her later years, she went on to become an agent for actor Robert Blake, prompting the question, where was she the night of the murder?
Oh, man. You want a Kleenex?
Yeah, I guess you
Sorry, buddy.
Oh,
yeah.
Allergy shit. Relatives say the aged icon of weed was found dead in her living room, sprawled on the ceiling.
On the ceiling?
Yeah. You know, she's icon of weed. I told you guys, stop with the onions. All right. Max Veldhaus, author of popular children's books, dies at age 81.
Mm-hmm.
Max Veldhaus, the beloved Dutch author and illustrator of children's stories, featuring the curious and trusting character Frog, has croaked. Offering life lessons to children as young as 3, Veldhaus's popular Frog character struggled with bitter cold in the story Frog in Winter, confronted a scary noise, and Frog is frightened, and finally discovered his roots in the acclaimed Frog Eats His Young.
You can be all right.
Yeah. It just never fails. Allergies at this time of year. You know?
Yeah. The winter. I've heard that.
Yeah. A flowering plant.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. Here it goes.
Feldhaus's first big success was the story Frog in Love, in which Frog is smitten with a duck. The story became so popular that the Dutch author received the prestigious Hans Christian Andersen Medal for Most Disturbing Fetish in 1989.
Shut the window.
Yeah, I'll get that.
My eyes are teary.
Yeah, let me get the window.
Feldhaus's long-awaited masterpiece, a moody epic, capturing the protean quality of dreams and shattering the conventions of the waking mind, titled Frog Against Wake, remained unfinished at the time of his death.
Achoo! I have allergies. It's just an allergy. My eyes still red.
You should get medication or something. Some medicine for those?
I don't know. You know, you keep on bringing the plants in here. Okay. You're the ficus?
Yeah. All right, buddy.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this has been... this is this week's Morning Remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, he's jumping on you.
I'm sorry, buddy. Maybe this isn't the job for you.
I got nothing else.
All right. Well, thanks for being here.
No problem.
Right now, we're going to talk about... joining us by phone from Fairfax, Virginia, is the managing editor for The Hill. He's our congressional reporter. Are you taking off, Mort?
Yeah.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Have a good day.
All right. Don't worry about me.
Okay. Please, say good morning to Bob Cusack. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're okay. Bob? We're okay. So over the weekend, all right, the president was at this weird kind of... what was it, a retreat where they consummate their collective contract with Satan? Now, what happens, what's the purpose of that meeting up there in Virginia?
Well, they like to get away. It's actually a very nice resort, pretty expensive place to stay at in West Virginia, and they're trying to get on the same page on Social Security because a lot of Republicans think that this is going to be their death at the polls and at the come election time. But so Bush is making a promise to them that, hey, I'm going to push this, I'm going to lead on this, so just follow me. But still, Republicans are still pretty cautious about this.
Mm-hmm. Bob, I don't understand. At one point, it seems as though the president, when he was questioned about Social Security, said to one lawmaker, look, it's your guy's job to actually make the law. What, I mean, is he saying essentially he's not going to write the bill, it's their job to do it?
Well, there are a lot of egos involved here. I mean, some lawmakers want the president to offer a very specific plan. But there are other legislators like the Ways and Means Committee Chairman Bill Thomas, who was on Meet the Press recently. He is a master of writing legislation. He likes to do the details. So there's no real consensus on it. What there is consensus among Republicans is that Bush has to be the cheerleader. He has to be the one on the road educating the public on, you know, the problems, the fiscal issues of Social Security. But some people, the key lawmakers, really actually want to do the lawmaking.
But if he's like, is there sort of a standoff going on? If he's asking these guys to draft a law, is he clear on his message? It seems like there's some it doesn't seem very clear.
Oh yeah, no, there's a lot that's unclear. He hasn't presented a plan. He's expected to do so pretty soon, within a week. But how clear that plan will be, that in the past, unlike President Clinton, President Bush likes to draft principles. He doesn't go into detail on legislation. So it's going to be interesting to see how detailed this bill will be. I mean, some Republicans have said, like Bill Thomas, the chairman of Ways and Means, has said, well, I don't want you to focus on the specifics of what the president has put on the table because he's going to write the specifics. So there is a bit of a standoff and...
improvising.
Yeah.
Yeah, as it goes along. We don't need an active strategy. Yeah.
That's right. No, there's going to be more bumps along the road. And even top Republicans in the House say everything really has to go right for this to happen, that we could be thrown off. I mean, it's an uphill climb. They have the majorities in the House and Senate, but right now the odds are unlikely that they can get this done.
Hmm. Now, Bob, how much should we expect to hear about Social Security in the State of the Union address? I mean, I know you haven't seen the advanced draft or anything, but are people expecting to hear him talk a lot about that in the State of the Union?
Yes, yes. A lot of it, I think it's going to be, a lot of it's going to be Iraq, and a lot of it's going to be Social Security reform. Republicans, and this is the beginning phase of what they want, for him to be the cheerleader. He needs to talk about that extensively. And if he doesn't, a lot of Republicans on Capitol Hill are going to be disappointed. So I think you're going to see a good amount of the speech on Social Security.
And what about the Democrats as he lays out this agenda?
Well, the Democrats are already, you know, they're not laying out their plan yet. They're going to have a plan, but they're not. They're going to wait until the president puts out his plan. They're behind the scenes talking about what their plan is going to look like as an alternative. Their plan will not go anywhere because they don't control any the House or the Senate. But
do you think
they need to have an alternative, and they will. So they're already you know, putting together that plan.
Do you think it would help if they went to a nice resort? And maybe we should suggest that. I don't know. So how do you think the Iraqi elections are going to affect domestic politics?
I think it's going to, the political capital that the president has can be diminished, whether, you know, how well this goes. Obviously, yesterday looked to be a decent day for the president compared to the last several weeks in Iraq. So, but there's a real cautiousness among Republicans on the Hill on that issue, too. They want an exit plan. They don't like going back home and their constituents raising that issue. There's growing concern about Iraq and how long we're going to be there. So if that goes sour, that continues to be a real question mark, and the polls are starting to show that as well. His effort to move domestic policy is going to be hampered.
Exit polls have Bush ahead, you know.
Bob, you know, there were some people on the Hill that were pushing a bill that would set a definite timetable for a pullout from Iraq. I'm not sure anybody thinks that's actually going to happen, but how much pressure will the, perceived success of the elections bring to bear on the administration and to lawmakers on Capitol Hill to really start bringing those troops home?
There's going to be a lot of pressure to do that. And Senator Kerry was on Meet the Press yesterday, and he said he doesn't agree with Senator Kennedy, who wants a firm timetable and a firm commitment to start leaving basically now. But sure, everybody wants them out of there, but no politician really wants to go out on too much on a limb and say, you know, we have to leave now. But they do want to leave as soon as it is practical, and that's going to be playing out, I think, you know, very much over the next couple of weeks.
So now, what about the Gonzales confirmation hearings? How's that going to unfold now? How many Democrats are going to actually stand up and vote against them, and how is this all going to play itself out?
Well, you know, everyone in committee voted, every Democrat in committee voted against him. So I think you're going to see a lot of, a bulk of the Democrats in the Senate vote against him. He'll go through, but certainly, the vote in committee was surprising to some that all the Democrats stood up and said, no, we don't want this guy. And I think a lot of some people were concerned that on the Democratic side that Rice was going to go through pretty easily, but she got some opposition as well. So Democrats are definitely standing up on some issues and making some points, and especially on the Iraq war. Some people say it's too late. They should have been making this case before the election.
Well, thank God they're at least, that's our business here. I'm glad that they're all, you know, they're all coming together and standing up, and so that you see that as being, that's going to continue with this confirmation hearing as far as the whole House is concerned.
Yeah, definitely. You're going to see a lot of people on the Senate floor, Democrats, vote against them.
Beautiful. Well, Bob Cusack, great talking. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks so much.
Take care. That was Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill, with our little congressional update. We will be back with the job listing, and we're going to hear some of our highlights from our conversation with Mick Ware that we had earlier today as well. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Yeah, Good morning, Memphis, Tennessee. You're listening to Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark
Lowry.
Hi. I got a little brain skid from the caffeine. I got to stop doing this. I was off the coffee for so long. Anyways, we're here welcoming our 46 affiliate. That's WWTQ 680 AM in Memphis, Tennessee. Good morning. I hope everything's going all right down there.
Awful lot of music came out of Memphis.
It's unbelievable. Scare me. We're playing all these songs that
Elvis,
came out of Memphis.
Al, Otis, Booker.
Unbelievable. So they got a Starbucks downstairs, and you know what? They do something. There's something wrong with it.
Why?
Because they crack it up.
Oh, you're saying they just put too much caffeine in their coffee.
Well, they do what the cigarette companies did. They make it a very efficient, caffeine discharge system. You know exactly, like, I just overdid it. I had a couple of cups of tea when I got in there. I had a half a cup of this, whatever it is in that cup right there.
Jet fuel.
That Starbucks stuff. And now I'm like, now I can't think properly. But I'm having a good time.
There you go.
Clark Torreson, don't have the look of panic. You know what I mean?
No, have the look of panic if he turns around and walks out the door unexpectedly.
Hey, look,
then panic.
We know a lot of people out there are out of work and spent your Sunday leafing through the want ads or monster.com. We want to help. Be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So here is our Morning Sedition Monday Help Wanted listing. Wanted, professional prude. The FCC is looking for a new chairman. The FCC seeks a dedicated multitasker able to facilitate the conglomeration of all media outlets into one all-powerful monopoly, but still have enough of an eye for detail to be properly horrified by the glimpse of a breast. If you've always suspected that most cartoon characters are dedicated sodomites, or if you think the Discovery Channel should be barred from mentioning the planet Uranus, you may be the person for us. Benefits include medical, dental, and hours of perusing tapes of Grammy Awards performances looking for an accidental Beyonce pie shot. Yeah, there you go. Here we also wanted exotic interrogators needed. The U.S. military is seeking attractive young women between the ages of 18 to 25 to conduct prisoner interrogations at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Minimum requirements include a degree in law enforcement or related field and at least a C cup. Those with crappy implants need not apply. Interrogators / dancers will be expected to extract vital information from potential terrorists and to select their own songs on the jukebox. If you've always wanted to serve the cause of freedom and make great tips, apply now. And get this, girls. We'll pay you extra when you're on your period. Ask about the details. Contact your local Army recruiter for an audition.
Ooh, you're going straight to hell. But I'll apply
again
for that first gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to be the FCC chair?
I'll be the... I'm
just
approved.
So you can look at the stuff?
Hey.
That's
approved. Bring it. Bring
just
it.
So you can, just so
I
you
got
can.
A DVD player. Bring it.
Here we are.
Hey.
Hey, Riley Town. So we talked to Mick Ware earlier about the Iraqi elections. You know, I was spent some time in front of the tube.
Hey, he opened my eyes, that's for sure.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, as I said earlier, as somebody who hosts a liberal talk show and as a fairly liberal person, obviously, I don't want George Bush to be able to take credit, you know, but certainly I want people to be safe. I want the soldiers to come home. I want the Iraqi civilians to be, you know, happy. But, you know, there's something about the way they were presenting it on TV, like, oh, my God, this is it. Look, there's dancing and everybody's happy.
Yep.
That, you know, and I was like, it started to smell a rat a little bit. I'm like, you know, why is this the only story that's coming out? Where's the real deal? You know, and we talked to Mick Ware, who's definitely the real deal. He's Time Magazine's Baghdad bureau chief, and he laid out a little for us. Can we hear that?
44 people died just to cast a vote yesterday. And think of it like this. While it was fantastic that the elections were not, you know, set alight, that they were able to proceed. And while it was fantastic in terms of security, that not one of the suicide bombers was able to physically get inside a polling booth. They actually exploded in the queues or while they were being patted down. So they never got inside the secure areas. Think about it this way. 9 men strapped munitions to their chests and blew themselves up at polling booths. 9. Now, if that happened in Jerusalem on election day, or if that happened in Moscow with Chechens on election day, it would be hailed as a crisis. In relative terms of the scale of the horror here, that's a good day.
Yeah, it's very interesting that, you know, we have grown to dismiss numbers of people killed in terms of of what happens in Iraq on a day-to-day basis, because it's been so bad for so long that you can actually say, you know, 44 people perhaps were killed on Election Day, but that's pretty good.
Most Americans have no clue how many Iraqis have been killed since the American invasion began.
It can be as high as 100,000. And you know what's really sick is some of these insurgents actually were picking people up.
Yeah.
They take them to the polls. Like, hey, you guys
and
need
they
a
blew
ride?
Up the and car they were driving.
Car.
Yeah.
That is definitely an obstruction to voting.
Well, it's an obstruction to voting, and it also shows that, I mean, you know, the one thing that you have in a military conflict is the other side's, I guess, fear of death. If they don't have a fear of death, it can be very difficult to, you know, to literally subdue that population.
Out, yeah, and people went out and voted anyways. Here, people, like, you know, if they're like, what, I gotta, what do I got to do? I got to show my ID? And what, how long is it going to take? A half hour?
Nah, I'm coming back.
Nah, I'm not going to.
I'll be back later.
I don't even know where I'm supposed to go. Here, people were like, you know, there's a lot of people that were excited. There were expatriates here at stateside that were, you know, thrilled about this. You got to figure this has been, what, 30, what, some odd years?
50. At least 50 since there was since the last time there was a democratic election inside of Iraq.
It's fascinating, and we're going to talk to Noah Feldman in the next hour, who drafted the constitution for the interim government, about how this unfolds now for Iraq.
And who gets to draft the next constitution?
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Social Security, and we're going to talk about that thing you and I were going to talk about earlier, and I'll just leave it at that.
What was that? I forgot. Oh, was that Memphis? We'll get to it here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's 6 past the hour. Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. What a day it's been. Day after the Iraqi elections. We've got Noah Feldman coming in a few minutes. Not coming in. He's going to be on the phone at the bottom of the hour.
Yes.
He's the guy who helped draft the original Iraqi constitution. We'll talk to him how the government's going to lay out there. I got an article in front of me about the Vermont Teddy Bear Company. The Vermont, dig this, man. See, this is the kind of stuff that just tweaks me out. Vermont Teddy Bear Company released a Valentine's bear that had this little bear in a little straitjacket, right, for Valentine's Day. Like, I'm crazy for you. Cute, right, in a straitjacket? No. Apparently, crazy people, they're pissed off about it. All right.
Nine people with mental health issues, don't you?
Dude, this is like cartoons, though. They're doing what the right does.
All right, bears with mental health issues.
But it's not. It's ridiculous. Like, what are you telling me? There's some guy going, God, that bear, I'm going to believe I could just get my arms out to show that I'm, you know, come on.
Bears all over Vermont are doing
They're
that.
They're certainly not writing letters. But anyways, what I'm saying is, like, it's a little ridiculous. It's a goof. It's a goof. It's not insulting. Don't these type of liberal causes, don't they have anything else to do with their energy?
Hey, look,
but sit there and try to rally a teddy bear company?
At $70 a pop, it's also a very profitable little enterprise.
Oh, well, that is crazy.
$70 for a bear in a straitjacket.
That's crazy to buy a crazy bear for $70.
Hey.
Isn't it? Speaking of bears, watch this segue. I hear the polar bears are almost gone.
No, that's the polar caps that are almost gone.
Well, no, it's...
You're right.
That because of the ice caps melting, that the bear... And I know, the polar bear happens to be, and this is honest, emes, as they say in Yiddish, truth, my favorite animal. Always has been. Always
polar was. Bears?
Yeah, it's very sad.
Why, because of what they do to seals?
No, because there's just something about... They're so beautiful and so big yet cute at the same time, and so they're sort of solitary. They're very unique. I've never been able to figure out why the polar bear is my favorite animal, but I've been fascinated with them since I was a kid. Yeah.
Well, you know, there is an issue about global warming and whether or not the polar bear is actually going to have a habitat in the next century or so.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're saying, according to the World Wildlife Fund, that world temperatures could go up in just the next 2 decades. To a threshold that would trigger dangerous disruptions to the Earth's climate. They're talking about possibly going up 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit above pre-industrial levels sometime between 2026 and 2060. This is according to the World Wildlife Center.
So this is like this is horrible, and this is something I don't understand. At what point does the collective, you know, population of the planet realize that soon we could be, you know, dying collectively because of this industrialization, because of these mistakes we're making on an environmental level. We got our in-house...
environmentalist.
Vegan.
Free. Vegan environmentalist.
No. Look, I just want to say, Jim, yeah, yeah. Jim Earl is here.
An environmental correspondent.
Yes.
Correspondent.
I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to go vegetarian.
Really? Then why don't you just do it? Put your money where your mouth is, fella.
I will. Well, tell us how...
Before you go any further, why don't you explain to us exactly what being a vegan has to do with global warming? And by the way, nobody in America believes in global warming because it was 54 degrees below zero in Minneapolis a couple of weeks ago.
But I had no idea. Well, I knew some of this, but when Jim expressed some interest in talking about this topic, that meat eaters... a lot of the blame can be placed on
a huge amount of blame. You know, in California, one of the probably the biggest agricultural state in the country, devotes 80% of its water to making meat.
Yeah.
And that's huge. It's the most wasteful industry in America.
Yeah.
And produces incredible amounts of pollution, pesticides that go into underwater aquifers
and poo.
That kill species.
Yeah.
They're killing us.
Yeah.
And ruining wetlands,
yeah,
and everything else that it has.
And
to
then,
do with
and cream. Then the methane, the cow flatus is.
Right. So wait a minute, are you saying free the cow? So do they make less methane when they're free? I don't know. I'm saying get rid of the cows we have now. Stop raising so many of them, and start eating more vegetables like we did 100 years ago. We were primarily
how would you propose getting rid?
Nation.
Wait a minute. How do you propose getting rid of the cow?
Well, you have a big Last Supper.
Yeah, this big Last Supper.
Here's your last hamburger.
Are
America.
You going to eat a burger?
For all of you lumpen,
you got a quarter pounder with cheese.
You lumpen meat eating freaks, have your big last meal, Caligula party, or whatever you want to call it. Get it over with, and then start acting responsibly. Because in 50 to 100 years. 10% of the birds population species will be gone, and 50% of the mammals will be gone, primarily because of your waste.
But no, you're saying that all this is going to happen because of cow flatus.
A huge amount. It's you know,
awful.
You have a huge responsibility because you're decimating the wetlands and the rainforest to supply your meat fix.
You mean
your hormones?
They cut down all the rainforest to create grazing grounds for these
grazing grounds, which last. It's the most inefficient way of producing grazing ground because the soil...
it's too salty. The salt that's in the manure from the cows sometimes destroys the soil.
The soil lasts for a few good years, and then it turns to desert.
Okay,
and
well, yesterday... Let me just tell you what I've been doing. Okay.
Oh, here you go.
Last night I made a thing of brown rice. Okay?
What is a thing?
Well, a pot.
A pot.
Because I had a bad experience in Richmond, Virginia with food. And I really was thinking about this yesterday. I'm like, I'm ready to do it. Now, so I made a vegetable salad, roasted root vegetable salad. It was very good with beets and carrots. You like beets, Jim?
Beets are real good for you.
Yeah. And I eat the collard greens all the time and kale, a lot of kale.
It's
but now, the real trick of it is I don't eat a lot of red meat, but I do occasionally have some poultry. Now, how about poultry gas? Is that also...
Yeah. Chicken's responsible for this, too?
I don't know about the gas, but the chicken industry is hugely polluting.
But
just ruining our underwater... water supplies.
Hey, you don't want me to have to catch them in the backyard, do you?
Well, no, that's the thing. I don't want you chasing chickens in the backyard.
Yeah. Well, then what else am I supposed to do if I can't buy in the supermarket?
The image alone is disturbing.
I know. But the image for me is disturbing.
Jim, I was told that the turkey I've been eating, I've had smoked turkey, that these turkeys are independent turkeys. They die happy. Many of them have jobs.
Do they die of old age?
What?
Do they have pensions?
Yeah. Well, no. They don't die of old age. They are part of a euthanasia program where they do a good amount of work, and right at the peak of their career, they say, now it's time for you to go to heaven in the intestines of Mark Maron. So what happens
and
is...
And that is heaven, believe me.
Yeah.
No, you know, if people
I'm mocking you. Yeah, okay.
You know, like 100 years ago, 150 years ago...
Irresponsibly, like, not drop on the floor?
No. We were primarily a vegetarian nation.
Yes.
You know, because meat was expensive.
Right.
And hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
Until the cattle industry, you know, latched on to a report by a German scientist saying that if you bulk up with protein, eating meat, you will become...
Superman.
Healthier and muscle bound,
right?
Which you know is a certain sense true, but not, he ignored the side effects of that, which was we're all going to die in 100 years.
I got to be honest with you, not to toot my own horn here, you know, but But I don't eat a lot of red meat, and I probably wouldn't mind letting go of the poultry either, because, you know, chicken, it grosses me out as well, because it doesn't, not the chicken itself, I like chickens, you know, yeah. I can look at a chicken and be very entertained for a few minutes, you know, but I
are those the ones that dance?
Have you seen them in Chinatown? They can do math, but but the thing is like, because I know the way the chickens are treated, I know it's awful. But fish, can I eat a little fish? I'm being very
yeah. How about fish, Jim?
Fish, you know, the only thing with fish.
What? Their greenhouse gas? Yeah, they produce methane too.
The world's fisheries are depleted to the point where it's incredibly. It's sad. The state of the
world. I don't have any trouble getting shrimp.
Sad.
All right, let's try and pull up the plane a little bit.
Both of you have children, right?
No, I don't have any children.
I have a child. I have children.
Sorry, Mark, I didn't mean to bring that up. But Mark Riley,
yes,
has children.
Yes, I have an 8-year-old daughter getting ready for school. Now, try not to gross her out, okay?
Yeah, you know, when she reaches maturity.
I can have children.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And someday she's gonna have children, possibly, right?
Now, yeah.
Do you envision a world where there are no songbirds outside in her backyard?
Oh my God!
50% of the mammals are gone.
If we lived in New York, this would all be true now.
It's a nightmare.
Hold
it's
on a
twilight
second.
Zone nightmare.
I just got to do something.
Was that a chicken? Uh oh.
What is that?
I'm dead.
Again,
just bum me out.
Yeah,
what was that sound? See, I don't get all the crazy sound effects over here. They can't afford to
get
headphones.
Don't undermine our crazy sound effects. I'm gonna go. You're gonna make me a menu at the end of today.
Don't
we're gonna sit down and we're gonna go over a vegetarian menu, and I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna become a vegetarian after I eat the turkey I have at home today. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Tomorrow is a new day, my friend.
Yeah.
I just bought some smoked turkey from the organic turkey farm down the green market, so I'm gonna eat that, and then. And this week, I'm going to try vegetarian.
That's right. Bone up on your legumes, pal.
And I'm not going to judge you because I know you're right in my heart, and I'm only being selfish because I like to eat. I like to be contrarian and
hey, I love
chicken. You love eating. I've seen your act.
Anyway. That's hilarious.
Okay, now get out, Earl.
And why did you quit doing stand-up again? Because your partner didn't want to do it anymore? Anyway.
Partner? What do you mean by my partner?
Yeah, I know. I remember Lank and Earl.
Oh.
All right, so anyways, what do you got?
I got nothing. Sorry, you're absolutely right. We couldn't hack it anymore.
Wow.
It was too painful going on the road.
Yeah, I know. And it's hard.
You know, he had bad allergies, and he used to dry his handkerchief on the headrest on the road trip.
Oh, boy. You know, so I'm going to try to
nice
do this.
Short,
and I appreciate you what you're doing, and I appreciate your feelings on it. And I know that you're right. And I'm just saying,
if you know, you're supposed to be progressive.
Yeah.
Get your heads out of the sand and see what you're doing with your own diet.
Get your heads out. I like what you wrote down. Why don't you say that? That was funnier.
Well,
get your heads out of the ground beef.
Get your heads out of the ground beef. That was very creative.
All right. 17 past the hour at Air America Radio. We'll be back.
Morning Sedition. Fighting treason. With reason. This is Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Good morning.
Going out to Memphis, Tennessee, our 46th affiliate, WWTQ 680 AM in Memphis, Tennessee. Good morning. Welcome. Hope you're having a good day already. Right now, from our buddy Ramon, who came in dragging a parachute, we delivered to me George W. Bush's Palm Pilot for today. Here's the president's schedule for January 31st, 7 a.m. Wake up. Note, what time is it in Iraq? It's freedom time. 8 a.m. Call Armstrong Williams. Cancel today's puff piece. Don't need to pay for good publicity today. 9 a.m. Call Mayor of Baghdad. Note, if they want to put up a statue of me, make sure they give me a nice-sized presidential bulge. That's what you call a pee-pee joke in the book. There you go.
Ooh.
11 a.m. Revised State of the Union Address. Add this. To everyone who ever doubted Iraq would have elections... Bite me. Try that. Be a nice opener. 1 p.m. Paul producers of Super Bowl halftime show. Bump Paul McCartney for 10-minute Iraqi voting tribute. Note, do I parachute in or jetpack?
Yow. 3 p.m. Call Mattel. Have them start work on the George Bush Liberator of Iraq action figure. Note, make sure they give me a nice size presidential bulge. It strikes me as a guy that, you know, it's interesting. I always think about the sexuality of presidents. 8 p.m. Plan Legacy. These elections should bring me one step closer to my dream, Mount Bushmore. Now, do you, Riley, do you like, I mean, I guess you don't really usually want to picture the president having sex. Obviously, with Clinton, we had to as a culture.
Yes, we did.
Which I didn't have a problem with, but still, even knowing what I knew about him, I still had a hard time picturing him having sex. But this guy, you know, I can't, it's hard for me to picture him as a sexual person.
Well, he's got twins. I mean, I don't know if that makes him a sexual person.
No, but I know
person,
he had but. Sex, but, you know, it's like, you know, it's with rock stars and stuff, like, you can picture, you know, certain people, like celebrities having sex, but, you know, George Bush, maybe it's just because I think it would be just a very quick thing. I don't know. I don't know what it is. That
wow.
You're not saying that's so funny. You know what's funny? That guy, out of all the things I've ever said on the air here about him, that, you know, that would be the one that gets me in trouble. That's what I, you know, that I get the black ops at me, come into my house at night. You know, sometimes I think about that. That's how nuts I am, that, like, I'm sitting there in Queens with my three cats, you know, waiting for the door to open and have these masked gunmen come put a couple of slugs into my pillow.
They're not going to put any slugs in your pillow. You know what they're going to tell you? Mm. You get on the air tomorrow and you say the president's a stallion. That's
right.
All.
Right. It's like that scene in Network.
Yeah.
You know, where I start preaching the gospel of Bush. That would be bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of people preaching the gospel of Bush. Too many people listening to the gospel of Bush.
Well, dig this, man. So, you know, he's trying to sell this, the private, the casinoization of Social Security to African-American communities. He's saying that, you know, last week they came out and said that this is going to help blacks more than it's going to help anybody else. And that turns out to be a fallacy.
Well, see, only the Heritage Foundation, we all know how conservative they are.
Yes.
They're the only ones who've done a study that tries to make that point. The fact of the matter is this. The way the system is currently structured, blacks pay less than whites on average into the system. So the distribution of those benefits, assuming that they're equal between blacks and whites, slightly favors blacks. And also, by the way, that evens out the whole issue of blacks dying at a younger age, which really ought to be the central question in all of this. But there are other features of Social Security that tip the balance towards blacks. For example, 13% of the population is black, but 17% of those receiving disability benefits through Social Security are black. So on balance, the program may actually benefit blacks more than whites. And certainly when you start talking about the number of blacks...
The way it is. Yes.
When you start talking about the numbers of blacks for whom Social Security is a primary or a large chunk of their income, it definitely benefits blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, there are probably on a percentage basis more blacks for whom that is true than there are whites.
It's just interesting that so much of the policy that the Republicans support, the current type of Republicanism, you know, it works against, you know, blacks, really. I mean, you're just talking about just, you know, like HIV and AIDS is disproportionately affects blacks, violence, violent deaths, you know, disproportionately affects blacks, stuff that, you know, it's like it's almost as if this administration thinks that they can hypnotize people into thinking differently. They're going to hypnotize the black community into you know, supporting something against their own self-interest is ridiculous.
Well, I mean, you know, the AARP, people like Jeffrey Liebman, who was a former Clinton administration official who's done research on this, and that research has been used by the Bush administration to promote their thing, and the Social Security Administration itself have all come out with studies that say that the program benefits blacks not hugely disproportionately more than whites, but certainly slightly more.
But now the Republicans are trying to say that they're the civil rights party.
Well,
we'll talk about that hopefully a little later. We got Noel Feldman coming up next to talk about the Iraqi Constitution, which he had part of drafting the original one. We'll see what he has to say about the elections after this.
After this, and after we listen to a little Elvis here on Air America Radio.
Well, my hands are shaking and my knees are weak. I can't see.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Morning's edition on Air America Radio. Good morning, Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to our 46th affiliate, WWTQ, 680 AM in Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome aboard. Hope you're having an okay day so far. Oh, look who's on the phone. Okay. It's our only listener who has a code name. It's Pollux. What's up, Pollux?
Hello, Maron. Don't you want to say my name sounds like bollocks?
Well, now that you mention it, that's what
British people call testicles.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I have to deal with mental children.
All right.
But I just put up with this because I have a message.
Yeah.
I assume you heard about the sponge.
Oh, Pollux, you're not going to bring up the SpongeBob SquarePants is gay thing. I expect a lot more from you, Pollux.
Oh, and you'll get it. Yeah. Of course, he's not gay. That's crazy. I mean, he's a cartoon sponge, for God's sakes. But he is an emissary from a secret and powerful cult bent on world domination.
Well, I guess that might be easier for his parents to accept than the gay thing.
Nice, man. Keep the drones laughing while they forge their own chains. Now listen up.
All right.
Who designed the pyramids?
Oh, I know this one. It's a mysterious fellowship of master architects who evolved into today's Freemasons, right? What do I win? Am I right?
You win the real story, man.
All right.
The Freemasons are amateurs, much like yourself.
Okay.
The real message of the pyramids is in the hieroglyphics.
Mm-hmm.
The people who draw them formed an even more secret society. It evolved down through the ages, through medieval manuscript illuminators, down to today's cartoonists.
So I'm afraid of what George Bush is going to do. Then I should worry. If I'm afraid, you know, if I'm afraid about what the president's going to do, maybe I should be worried about the guy that draws Family Circus. Is that what you're telling me?
Funny, Maron, yeah. Although not too well expressed.
Hey, all right, take it easy, Alex. What do you got?
You should be writing for Marmaduke. Obviously, not every cartoonist is in the cult.
Yeah.
Family Circus and the Garfield guy are definitely out.
Uh-huh.
But the SpongeBob people are deep, deep in the mix. There's clues everywhere. Like, you ever wonder, why the square pants?
Yeah, what's the angle?
If I didn't have a mission, I would hang up right now.
Okay.
The square pants refer to the sans-culottes, the most extremist elements during the French Revolution. Danton and Robespierre were both Freemasons. But the badass wing, square pants, Maron.
Okay, all right. Where the cartoonists come in? All right, draw me a picture, Pollux. How about that?
You know I hate you, don't you?
Yeah, I know, buddy. Yeah.
Don't you see, man? The cartoonists are animators.
Okay.
Animators, man! And the master animator was Walt Disney. And what do you animate except the stuff of life itself?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Dateline Washington. Federally funded stem cell lines are all contaminated with a foreign molecule. From a mouse.
Okay. All right, so you're saying this particular mouse only has three fingers?
Yeah, and it gets scarier.
Okay.
Scientists have found a new system to maintain the stem cells, using a molecule from an unnamed, quote, marine mollusk.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now this makes sense.
It does?
Yeah. The whole world is run using the esoteric wisdom of a small band of artisans who safeguard their knowledge but leave clues scattered throughout centuries of sketches, from cave paintings to computer-animated sponges. All right? Bambi holds terrifying secrets. Forget the Da Vinci Code. Crack the Disney Code. And now a battle brews between the old guard, whose deep-frozen leader awaits reanimation in a cryogenic chamber beneath Space Mountain, and the revolutionary upstarts in their angular trousers. I get it. The victors will rule the coming world in which their animation cells will be the living cells of our own bodies.
Holy crap!
Yeah, Pollux, we have another caller. This one has a message for you. You're on the air, caller.
Oops. I guess I ripped my pants again.
Oh, man!
Wow.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get back to Pollux at another time.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling he'll call back, but right now let's get into the news again. Here we go. Really? Okay. Sorry, buddy. I was all ready to, like, get on the phone with Noah Feldman, and he's not on the phone,
but
so
that's okay.
Let's talk a little bit more about Iraq before we get him on, because I imagine we're going to get him on. Now, we heard a lot from Mick Ware that said, it was pretty hairy there. You know, obviously,
yeah.
It's an amazing thing that there was an election at all, but he led us to believe that, it was clearly, owned, operated, managed, and put on, by the Americans, and that, the security was as good as it was. Still, 9 suicide bombers within Baghdad was not enough to disrupt whatever was going on in Baghdad, but throughout the rest of the country, there was a pretty limited turnout.
You know what was impressive about what Mick said, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
It's that they cannot keep up this level of security past the election itself.
Yeah.
In other words, now they essentially locked down the country over the weekend. The American military, along with some assistance from the Iraqis, but it was mainly the American military, stopped all vehicular traffic into and out of Baghdad. Nobody could go anywhere by motor vehicle.
Okay?
Yeah.
In many other parts of the country, many other major cities, they tried to do the same. And certainly when you start talking about taking full control of the major roadways in any country, whether it be here or in Iraq, then you do control the country. But obviously the Americans cannot hold that past the election. They can't be on the corner every day of every week of every month of every year. And I think that maybe the insurgents figure, well, okay, let them have the day, let them do what they're going to do, and we'll deal with it on the other side. We'll deal with it, you know, as the people who are elected, and we won't know who they are for about another 8 to 10 days,
yeah.
But as they're elected, we'll deal with them. I mean, remember, these are the same people that essentially said to Alawi, you're a traitor and wait for the angel of death.
Yeah. Hey, Caleb, can we hear the second one of those Mick Ware pieces? We had Mick Ware earlier on in the show, as we were talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, he really paints an amazing picture. He's one of our favorite guests, but he was there. He was in Bakuba, you know, talking about what it looked like there.
I saw a microcosm. I was with one unit, a reconnaissance unit from the U.S. military's 1st Infantry Division in Bakuba, and what I saw doesn't quite match the hype. I mean, look, there was an election yesterday, and that is fantastic. People willing to stand up and have a go and do that. But any sense of this being an independent election is simply not the case. When we got there, here's the Iraqi security forces protecting these places. Some places were attacked with rocket-propelled grenades and mortars while we were there. And these Iraqi security guys were terrified. They had nothing to back themselves up. So if it was not for the U.S. presence, they couldn't possibly have hoped to have done it. And then the process itself, I mean, there was a lot of confusion. Ballot boxes that were supposed to be collected were brought in. Stamps that showed that it's a legitimate ballot went missing. A lot of them weren't returned at the end of the day. Here in Bakuba, a third of electoral staff didn't show up.
Yeah, that, you know, see, that's sort of the scene that you're not going to quite get on CNN. You know, I've not seen, you know, there's a lot of fluff pieces going on mainstream media right now.
Well, yeah, because this is considered a triumph for the president. Our president.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about
like
a lobby.
As I was saying earlier, it's like, you know, I certainly want the civilian population of Iraq and the Iraqis to, you know, to have the best possible for what they're living through right now. But it's very hard for me to sort of give Bush any sort of credit for anything.
Well, see, here's the problem, Mark. Out of this election and out of the drafting of the Constitution and all the rest of this, is it going to translate into improvements in the lives of everyday Iraqis? What we may have seen yesterday was the fact that some Iraqis, certainly 60% of the eligible electorate, are sick and tired of the insurgency telling them what to do, telling them whether to vote, telling them, you know, that they're going to die. They may be sick and tired of that, but they are also sick and tired of an American occupation that they've come to kind of relate to the infrastructure problems that are, you know, plague the entire country. No electricity, no water, no education, no jobs. All of this is going on, and it's being done, as far as the ordinary Iraqis are concerned, under the auspices of the United States of America. And, you know, this election is not going to change that.
Yeah, well, you wait. Now it's like, you know, whether the troops will probably definitely stay there. And I imagine that, you know, within a few months, if that isn't happening already, they're going to divvy up all those, the water services, the electrical services, all the public utilities there will be divvied up between American corporations, I imagine, if this sort of, you know, free market private utopia they're trying to create there, that's got to be part of the big vision.
That's got to be part of the vision, and it's a scary vision for ordinary Iraqis because they see Americans or other people that are contract workers doing jobs that they know they can do, getting paid good money for jobs they know they could do.
That can't be helping anything. Well, it's 43 past the hour. It's Air America Radio. We'll be back maybe with a guest, maybe not. Maybe Dan Pashman on the phone. We'll see.
Uh-oh.
Okay. We'll talk to you.
Morning
next.
Tradition on the air. MorningsEdition.com, Air America Radio.
And a little MC5 as we bring it in for landing here. I got a guy out there, Riley.
Where?
That's Mark Riley. I'm Mark Maron's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. He just loves the MC5, man. He sends me emails. He's like, dude, you're screwing my head, man. I woke up. It's MC5. I was having a dream about MC5. And then, you know, you were playing the MC5, and I knew the guy from MC5 because he stayed in my house once. And like,
who's Sinclair?
Yes, and Chris, this guy who writes me sometimes apparently was in a house where, you know, he woke up one day and Sinclair was crashed on the couch. So we're going to, I want to talk about a little bit about, I want to talk a little bit about how the Republicans are trying. Let's talk to Dan first. Dan Pashman is in Houston, Texas.
Why?
Dan Pashman's on a loser, Linda Pashman in Houston, Texas. Now, Dan, we didn't get Noah Feldman on the line. How do the Iraqi elections affect where you are?
The Iraqi elections were unequivocal success in Texas. I think no matter what would have happened, everything's coming up roses here in Texas.
What's going on, man? How you doing? You having a good time?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're pretty good. Did you have any barbecue yet or what?
Maron, I've been eating barbecue and Tex-Mex nonstop. It's pretty intense.
Where'd you go? Did you go to that place, Otto's?
No, I don't even remember the names of the place. It's been a whirlwind tour of barbecue. I've pretty much just been resting and then eating and then resting and then eating. My friend Jeff's been taking me all over.
Uh-oh. Yeah, that place, Otto's, wasn't the best one I had. That was where the Bushes used to go, is behind that hamburger place. I went to another place I couldn't remember. You don't remember where you went for barbecue?
What was it called, Jeff? Luling City Market.
Oh, yeah? I never went to that
place.
One. Yeah?
You still unhitching your pants when you finished eating, Pashman?
Oh, yeah, I put these Texans to shame. I didn't drop my pants to my ankles, per se, but I did unhitch them.
At the barbecue place?
I'm surprised you're still here talking to us.
What happens now, Dan? You're going from Houston to Mexico?
Yeah, I'm on my way to Mexico. I have to go back to Bush International Airport in a few minutes.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. So did you drove from the airport. Did you see any landmarks along the way from the airport there?
Dude, I drove right past Halliburton.
Yeah.
Oh.
It freaked me out. My friend Jeff turns to me and he says, "You're in the belly of the beast, man."
Yeah, I whenever I go to Houston, because that's right on the road from the airport, and there's just a sign right there on the highway, Halliburton. Did you guys just go up and did you feel like driving up and going, "Hey, dude, what are you guys doing? Can we see the books?
Where's my money?"
Exactly. I don't think anyone was in the office. They were probably all on vacation or something.
On vacation in Iraq?
Yeah, right. But I saw the Chevron building. I saw the Texaco building. I saw the Shell building. I saw the every oil company's. I saw the Enron building.
The old Enron building.
Yeah, there were just a lot of people in rags, you know, looking for spare change in front of the building.
So what? So you've been doing a lot of drinking, I imagine, too, right?
I've been kicking back on the sauce a wee bit.
Really? You're taking a break?
He's waiting to go to Mexico to get them 2-for-1 margaritas.
Yeah.
I'm saying I have been throwing the sauce back. They have a thing called Shiner Bock here in Texas. It's quite good.
Yeah. You sound a little hungover, are you, buddy?
No, I'm feeling good, man.
He'll never admit to being hungover. Dan Pashman doesn't admit to being hungover.
Well, we miss you, man.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We miss you, man. We're going to be, we have a good week down there. When I came in this morning, I missed the OCD energy, man.
Yeah. But we kind of like Julia, though.
Yeah.
I guess she offers some perks of her own, huh?
Wow. Yeah, this is a boys club, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But we got Julia to take the place for the week, or I guess for only today. I don't know if she's taking the place for the week or for the day.
Just for
the one day. Lucky for you.
So, Patrick,
hey,
what?
Nobody could ever take my place.
Whatever you need to think, buddy. whatever gets you through the day. Before you hang up, though, we're reaching out. We're looking for an editorial producer here at Morning Sedition. Have a good time in Mexico, Pashman.
Yeah.
Miss you guys. Take care.
Miss you too.
Take care, man.
That is Dan Pashman, son of Lewis, and Linda Pashman, who is drinking and eating barbecue and driving past. Apparently, he's just like, you know, they're just eating, drinking, and driving past oil companies in Halliburton.
Yeah.
Party. So let's talk about this. How is the Republican Party trying to, accommodate? I was going to use the word assimilate. That might be a better word.
Well, they're just trying to reach out, and it's amazing what they're doing. They're saying that they're trying to get as much as 30% of the national black vote in the 2008 presidential election.
This is like a pet project of Rove's.
Yes.
He is going to do this.
Yeah. This is part of what George Bush hopes will be his enduring legacy to the Republican Party. Now, that is a very, very tall order. The last Republican to do that well was Dwight Eisenhower, mm-hmm. and that was in the 1950s.
Why was he successful at it?
Because Eisenhower got a lot of, you know, and it's funny the way it all turned out. After 1956, which was the election where he beat Adlai Stevenson, mm-hmm. the following year was Little Rock. And that was when Dwight Eisenhower, to the surprise of many in the country, sent federal troops to integrate Little Rock Central High School.
Right.
And he got, and even Richard Nixon benefited from that somewhat in the 1960 election, because that was a Republican. And Martin Luther King himself in 1956 voted for Eisenhower over Adlai Stevenson. And remember that the black community still was giving a substantial minority of their votes to the Republican Party, going back to the period from Lincoln through the New Deal. So that wasn't all that unusual. But starting with Lyndon Johnson, particularly, Kennedy and Johnson in the early 1960s, Johnson, when he signed the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, etc., that really kind of bound black voters to the Democratic Party for a long time. But I'm going to tell you something. Mm-hmm. If the Democrats sleep this, if the Democrats don't do anything to maintain the level of interest of the black community in their party, then the Republicans will be able to pick off black folks little by little, bit by bit. Because yeah. now, I mean, and you know, the part of the problem Republicans have had over time is that they have always been extremely ham-handed in their overtures to the black community. It was like, okay, well, we got Brian McKnight singing at the convention. That's our outreach to black people.
Right, right.
Well,
right.
Obviously, that hasn't worked over time.
Right.
Now they're real, and see, what he's doing now, he's reaching out to the black clergy on three separate issues he knows they will go for. One is opposition to same-sex marriage. Two, school vouchers. Three, faith-based initiative money.
Right.
With the exception of same-sex marriage, the last two both have to do with money.
Yeah, the third one's big.
Yeah, and the third one is extremely big. And a lot of black clergy people, now, to their credit, you know, a group of black Baptists kind of threw down the gauntlet to the president over the weekend. Essentially, this was on Friday, where they said to pay, you know, they need to, the president needs to pay as much attention to democracy at home as democracy abroad. And they issued a list of demands. The Congressional Black Caucus, all 43 of them Democrats, also put forward an agenda to President Bush. Not everyone thinks he's going to go for it, however.
Right. So I it's hard for me to understand, you know, how he can be as disingenuous as he is and have the sort of the policies that he has, which compromise, mm-hmm. you know, most people, black people, a lot of them. What kind of trick is he going to pull?
Well, hey, it's not just him. The media. There was a column that came out the other day that says that there were numbers of black people. We don't know how many and how widespread this was, but a lot of black people were upset at the way Condoleezza Rice was questioned by Barbara Boxer and others on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Oh. Now, that's hilarious to me.
It's so complicated.
And, you know, and she passed 85-13. So what's the problem? But see, when you have media that, and Deborah Orrin, the woman who wrote the column, is not black, but yet she talks to all these black people who say this. Well, when you start getting those little kinds of paper cuts all over the country over time, people start to believe that there is a substantial number of people within the black community who feel that way.
Yeah. Well, I guess I just think it all comes down to these gestures, you know, that they're trying to make symbolic gestures to people as their sales pitch. And if they get the clergy to sort of start reworking their flocks,
yeah.
I mean, that's where it really gets dangerous and they cross certain lines, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, here's the liberal agenda for today from the Streisand Compound. One, tell people the new movies Alone in the Dark and Hide and Seek are about Bush's Iraq policy. That's right. Two, for the sake of your nerves, stop referring to the race for DNC chairman as the second most important election of our lifetime. Three, drop tie-dye mixture into Dick Cheney's laundry so that he wears bright, cheery rainbow colors to his next Holocaust Memorial appearance. How about that? Four, lodge FCC complaint against New Wayne Newton reality show on the E-Network. The First Amendment has its limits, people. And five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Oh, sure, I watch the Iraqi elections. I really like the part where the people lined up to vote thinking their lives might get better. That was hilarious. Wake up, sheeple. The BS is up around your chin. What do we got tomorrow?
Man, we're starting out some very historic stuff here, man. First of all, it's Black History Month.
Yes, sir.
But the other thing is we're going to be talking to candidate for DNC chair. That election is coming up soon, and we'll bring you all the latest here on Air America Radio. Have a good one, Mary.
You too, Riley. So